Blog Talk Radio.
So you left me hanging last week. I was on the show by myself without Cotton or anyone, and I had four women to contend with, but we made it through. It was a great show, and it turned out to be very good. And, you know, every time you have Samantha Joyner on the show, you know, the lady who writes about women pimping, you know, it was off the chain.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you know how.
I caught her because, you know, like, whenever I miss the show, I always go back. And as soon as I heard the show, would I send you a message? I sent you a message like, yo, that's crazy. Hey, you know, I just love it at that.
Yeah, it was off the chain, but we had a good one. And let me do some admin notes out real quick, and we're going to go forward. As all of you know, in the Kansas City area, on the 28th of this month, we're going to have a book signing for Morris at the Dark, written by Red Snapper. It's going to be at the Broadway Jazz Club downtown in Kansas City. We're going to be doing that thing from 6 to 8, and, of course, we're going to have drinks and all kinds of happy hour specials going on as well. So if you're in the city, come on by and check us out, and get a book and get me to sign it. We're going to have some people read a little bit, and I'm not going to read them, but let some other people read it and let them get horny and read it out loud and, you know, just give it a, make it fun. So that's what we're going to do. So if you're in the town, in the city, just let me know. Or if you're not here, just let me know you want to get a book. We can take care of that as well. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and see about bringing in, see if I can bring in my our guest here, DV, because he's here, and this brother was here early, so we're going to definitely see what he's about. Also, there's an 817 number. I'm going to check him out as well. So we'll see what's going on. But okay, brother, Mr. Patterson, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Why are you doing? I can barely hear you. I just hear an echo from the back. So you might want to turn down either your okay, go ahead and speak.
Can you hear me better? Am I better?
Oh, yeah, we can hear you good now. That's good. So how you doing, Benjamin J. Patterson? How you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. How are y'all this evening?
We're doing okay. But first of all, like I told you before we started, I got D.V. Head here. He's my co-host. And before we even go any further in this interview, we must let you know that we talk shit about a minute. We want you to be yourself. And I want you to relax. Can you do that?
Definitely.
Okay, brother. So what we're going to do is we're going to give people a chance right now. We often get too many men on the show. We do get them to come on, but when they do, they usually try to talk shit a mile a minute, or they try to be sexy or whatever. We're going to give you a chance to explain to everyone who you are and what you got going on, because we know you have several books out, and we want to get you to go ahead and kind of talk about that to break the ice.
Well, actually, I'm new to the author, to the writing scene. My first book was called Stuff Happens. It's sort of like my actual real life accounts of events before, during, and after Hurricane Katrina that caused me to lose everything and travel from place to place, going through different ups and downs, trying my life back together.
Okay, you kind of breaking up a little bit. So you are a native of Louisiana?
Yes, I'm from New Orleans.
From New Orleans, okay. I have some history down there in New Orleans. Anyway, we're not gonna go there. Anyway, let's get back to you, my brother. I'm trying to get you to relax because you sound like you're so serious. And we understand that writing is a thing. It is serious. We all care about our craft. But we want you to also relax as well. You went through a trying time when you were going through that. You can kind of give us a little background. So is that what the first book is basically about, your experiences in that?
Yeah, it starts off with Katrina, because Katrina was a life-changing event for a whole lot of people, not just us here in New Orleans. It also affected a couple other cities. And in the same way, it caused people to lose their lives, lose their homes. And it was hundreds of thousands of people that was displaced. And you know, like as I write in the book about, I was in the military, and I know that we can put 5,000 Marines anywhere in the world at any given in 24 hours. But I mean, after Hurricane Katrina, when it happened, it was kind of a disappointment because of such a slow reaction to it. Myself and other people ended up going through a whole bunch of shit that was just totally unnecessary due to lack of a lot of things. And basically, my book is my inspirational. Myself and to others, you know what, even though the book really was supposed to be called Shit Happens, but that was already coined, so we decided on Stuff Happens. And I mean,
okay.
Like, life is made of all these things happening. We just have to be strong enough, persistent enough to keep going forward.
Okay, so during the time you was down there, you said you was in the Marines?
I'm from here, but I was in the Marine Corps. I had just came back from the Marine Corps before stuff happened, before Hurricane Katrina.
Okay. Well, that general that was in charge of that, I actually worked with him. General Andre was I'm not saying he's a good friend of mine, but I actually had my time. I was in the military as well. I was in the Army, and I spent several years of my life in the military, quite a few years, and I happened to work with that general prior to that, and I had retired before that happened. But anyway, he's something else, General Andre. But anyway, we'll get back to you. So is that the only book you have right now, or do you have another?
Besides that, I dabbled in a little erotica.
Now you didn't open up the damn door. Okay, now you didn't open up the damn door with the erotica. Now you know that we're gonna have to talk about that, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
Okay. So we got the sentimental shit out the way. So now we're ready to talk shit about sex. All right. So here we go. Now, chat room, when y'all have questions, please go ahead and type them in because we will definitely ask them. So we're going to do that. We just want to make sure that's done out. Now, what do you have on the erotic arena right now?
Can I interject real quick on you real quick? The stuff happens. It's not just on the sentimental now. Also included some, because during that time, I met a woman that I was close with, very intimate with. And I included some details about our sex life in that also. So
okay, so you have some sex in your book.
A little spice with it.
So,
a little spice
did
in
you,
there.
So are you telling me that you put some details in the Katrina story? That she was floating down on a raft and fucking at the same time? Is that what you're telling me?
No, I wasn't.
I'm trying to get you to laugh, man. He's so DB. Listen to this dude, man. Okay, go ahead.
I understand. It's just but I do have some. No, sex is part of life. That's what I believe. And just like when I wrote the book, and I mean, it's a natural part of life. As long as to each his own, I guess. But,
well, I wish you would tell some of the religious arena that, because they feel like sex is something that was created separately. But anyway, that's another show. All right. So, did you want to talk about that sex in that book, or did you want to go into your other? Go ahead.
I got a couple questions. Like, basically, stuff happens as a chronicle of some of the things that you dealt with and went through after Katrina, right?
Yes.
So,
much,
somewhat adjourned. So, in essence, like, what did you learn, or like, what are some of these life lessons that came about as you were dealing with these issues?
A lot of things I learned was how to humble myself, because I went from almost at the top of my mountain to now living with other people and being humble to get myself where I need to get to. I learned one of the most important things I did learn was how to really be a man to a woman. Because, and stuff happens, a big part of it is a woman I met while I was in Little Rock. I met her when I was actually getting ready to kill some motherfuckers. Out in Arkansas, I befriended a crackhead, and during our friendship, this crackhead ended up robbing me, and he sold my stuff to the drug dealer that lived in the same apartment complex we did. So, it got to the point where I didn't care about anybody or anything. Luckily for me, I had a friend in the same apartment complex who had just came from doing 13 years in prison for armed robbery. And before I had gotten me a shotgun, a sawed-off shotgun. I got me some gasoline and some rope. And I was going to go, and the guy who sold my stuff, I really wanted to tie him and his girlfriend up and set them afire. And I was going to take the shotgun and do what I need to do in the house of the drug dealer, just because. And before I was going to do that,
mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish. I don't want
to. Hey, don't. Hey, just before you go, don't confess any crimes because I don't want to have to testify. So, you know, you good.
No, I'm not.
So let me ask you this, Mr. Patterson. Let me ask you this. Have you been doing any touring and talking to anyone about your experiences since you've written this book? Because the book was written in 2009. So have you been doing any touring or anything or talking to anyone about your experiences?
Any book tours or anything? Yeah, actually, I'm on Amazon, and I've done a couple of blog talk radio shows, but the book industry is a kind of new industry to me. Even though I wrote it in 2009, I really didn't. To me, writing this book was more of a stress relief rather than a product. Because at the time I wrote this book, when I started writing it, I was in a mental institution. And
you was in what?
I was in a mental institution. I had during that time in my life, I had a break when I was staying in Atlanta. I had some of a mental break, and that led me then in a VA mental institution in Tuskegee, Alabama. And being there, I learned a lot of things about myself. Being in the Marine Corps, I had a lot of anger issues, a lot of drinking issues, a lot of issues, and they helped me identify that and be able to live a normal life. Because I mean, if you've been in the military, you know, I was active, so being active duty and civilian is different work, and especially when you have a combat job, it kind of, when you come out here, like, what do I do now? What am I going to do out here? They don't do my job is not out here, and how do I deal with these problems now and all these other type of things?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get the book. I see it's 104 pages, and do you just only talk about the Katrina piece of your life, or do you go in depth after what happened after Katrina? I mean, just what it did impact it on you?
Yeah, actually, I believe only two chapters may be really just about Katrina. Because during Katrina, it was mostly a lot of destruction, a lot of, unfortunately for me, I wasn't in the area where a levee broke. I mean, because when a levee broke, that's like a river toppling over a city. And I was able to be evacuated out, but to me, my book was more involved with Africa. It's more in detail as Africa as I got out and things I went through, because I was completely in a whole new place where I knew no one. And it was a lot of, if it wasn't for the woman I met, I would have been killing some people that night. That was the only thing on my mind. And
go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Back.
I was going to ask you a question, but you're still coming kind of muffled. I can't hardly hear everything you're saying because you're going in and out. But are you walking? Because it sounds like you're moving around. But anyway, the thing is, I was going to ask, did you experience any of the Superdome? Were you in part of that, part of Katrina, or where did you get out before they were keeping people there, or What did you actually experience?
I wasn't in the Superdome, but a lot of my family members did evacuate the Superdome. A lot of people went to the Superdome because their homes were getting flooded, and where the Superdome is located is a little slightly bit elevated part of the city. So, but one thing about it was, a lot of people that did evacuate were criminals, and you had families mixed in with criminals to where they were indeed raping women and killing. There were some killings that wasn't reported, but that was done in the Superdome, and it was a lot of chaos because there were so many people. I mean, the city wasn't prepared for that at all. Not at all. We didn't expect it on that large a level.
Well, it's funny now that the mayor of that town, of that city at the time, is now in jail.
Right.
What is your thoughts on that?
The thing about it is, this city, a lot of people might not realize it, but this, a lot of money comes through the city. There's gambling 24/7. We are a port city, so we importing and exporting stuff from our ports. That's a lot of money. We have probably the number one or number two tourist spot. I mean, it's a lot of money being thrown at them, and a lot of things wasn't getting done around the city. So of course, everybody knows it starts with corruption, and corruption always starts with the head. So I mean, now they're actually fixing a lot of things. I'm not saying that this guy is not corrupt. This mayor, Mitch Landrieu, I don't see anything with him as of yet, but I mean, we have a history of having corrupt politicians.
Okay, so if you don't mind me asking, how old are you, brother?
I'm 35.
Okay, you've been through a lot in such a short amount of time. So I just wanted to, and that's good. I'm glad that you wanted to tell that story, because I know that's a story that a lot of people probably have forgotten, you know, with a whole bunch of things that's going on now and other things that happened since then. A lot of people think that's a has-been thing, but a lot of people are still, like you said, affected behind what happened with Katrina, and a lot of people are living in other places because of it still. You know, there are people in different cities that have moved away that may want to go back or may never want to go back, but because of what they experienced during that time and the slow reaction of the administration at the time that was in charge, just didn't give a fuck. I'm just going to say it like that. They just didn't care.
I mean, honestly, the government evacuated the city for anybody. I mean, they were on the radio making calls for the government. Because everything that was down was except the radio. I mean, it was chaos.
Okay, well, I appreciate you sharing that with us. But I do kind of want to get into a lighter side of things, if it's all right with you. We want to talk about some of your erotica, because I ain't gonna say what I want to say, because you might take it wrong. I applaud you for going through what you did, and I'm sorry that anybody has experienced that or any type of turmoil or anything like that, because that's close to being in a war zone. I have been there. I know from that experience of my time in the service how it can be. You can be, your living experience has been devastated by something that you can't control, and it just seems like nobody cares about you or your family or anything because of what they did and how they left you just hanging there. So I applaud you for going through that, and I thank you for writing the book. I'm going to have to get it so I can read it myself and take a look, and we may have to have you back on the show to talk a little bit more after I do that. But DV, you have anything else you want to ask him real quick before we move into his erotica?
Nah, he pretty much answered all my questions.
Okay, so this next subject that we're going to speak on, is it something that's already written, or is it something that you're working on?
It's actually on Amazon right now. They're e-books, 2 e-books that I've done.
Okay.
And they're erotic anthologies.
Okay,
let me
go ahead. Okay, so I'm going to go to your page right now and look at what you have. You say you have e-books.
Yeah. It might be better to go on, because the e-books are anthologies, and they're listed. I did it with some other authors.
Right.
So it may be better to go on Amazon if you want to research it.
Yeah, okay.
One
well,
is called
What is it? I'm sorry.
One is called VIP 2. And the other is Closet Freak.
I knew with some reason why I didn't write that book, because I was going to write a book called Closet Freak, and now I know why. Because you already didn't wrote the
You're
book.
You're going to write a book called... Okay. Another guy came up with the name of it. So he's the one that mines the book.
Well, okay, so Closet Freak is out there. Well,
yeah,
tell us about Closet Freak. Since I was going to write shit, you didn't wrote it already. Go ahead. Let's talk about it. Is it called Closet Freaks? Okay, I still can do it. Shit. No, that's another one out there called Closet Freak. Okay. Diary of a Vindictive Closet Freak, and then here's yours. Closet Freaks by several of you guys. So these are all men who decided they wanted to write an erotic book together. Tell us how that came
about. What happened was there was one main author. He
Jared Owens? Jerese Owens?
Yes, Jerese Owens. And I met him. You know of him?
Yeah, I know.
No, I'm looking. He knows him. Okay. DB, tell us about him. Okay, these are the authors that's on the book. You got Jerese Owens, Aaron Bebo, yourself, you got Clark Williams, Earl Williams, and Jamari King. These are all the authors. Should have had all y'all come on the damn show. Okay, so how many stories did each one of you write for this anthology?
We each wrote one story. I believe that there's 100 and some pages or more because we all did about a 30, 40 page story. It's all complete stories. And I should have been prepared, but because I really don't have any contact with the reader anymore. But
no, we don't want you to read it. That's okay. I just want you to tell us about the story that you wrote. What's the name of the story that you contributed?
Let me think. Oh, man. Because what's the name of my story? Oh,
okay. You don't know the name of your shit. Okay.
Yeah.
D.V., what do we got going on here, man? No, go ahead. Go ahead, brother.
Been a lot of things I've been into. I was going to school, get my associates in criminal. I was doing some bunch of other shit right now, but
you're doing a bunch of shit. You say you're doing a bunch of shit right now. You can't remember.
Let me think. Of the name of my story was.
Did you? And I'm not trying to be funny, but I'm gonna ask this question because a lot of us veterans have this problem. Did you get some PTSD when you was in there? Shit, man.
I got a taste.
You probably have, because, I mean, going through that Katrina thing, that would give you this shit. Nothing else.
I mean, yeah. I'm a two-time combat vet also.
Well, yeah, I understand. And we got Miss Cotton right here now. I think that's her. Or is that Melanie?
You know what? I don't know what my story is called.
713.
Hello.
Is that Melanie?
Yes.
How are you doing this evening, Miss Melanie?
Hi. Good.
We have a brother Benjamin J. Patterson who is trying to figure out the name of his anthology that he, his book that he, story that he wrote in the book. He can't remember right now, so he's looking so he can tell us. What the fuck you wrote?
Okay. I remember it.
Okay, he's remembering now. He's remembering. He remembers.
Oh, African versus American. Did y'all hear me?
No.
What did you say the name of it was again? What's the name of it?
The name of it was African Dick versus American Dick.
Oh.
Oh, damn. Oh, here we go. Melanie, we're going to leave you on. We're going to leave your mic on. Before we do that, though, let me find out.
I love women.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on, brother. Hold on before you start. Let me find out this other number first before we go forward, and then we're going to let you explain yourself because these women is getting ready to go off on your ass. Okay, 817 area code. State your name, where you calling from. If you're just listening, don't hang up. We just wanted to see if you had anything to say. Okay, I'll close your mic. All right, so here we go, brother. Now, you said the name of the book is what again?
I forget.
The name of the story is African Women versus what?
African male genitalia versus American male genitalia.
Oh, shit. Okay.
African
male genitalia versus American male genitalia.
I think the first time you said dick. I'm pretty sure.
I was babbling now. Come on. I was just trying to get my feet wet in the author in the writing.
Why would you write a story about dick unless you were in a dick?
You haven't heard the story yet.
Tell us about it, brother. Tell us. I guess you want to tell us about endowment sizes and all that shit. Okay, go ahead.
No, I'm not. This is the point of the story. There's this guy in this neighborhood that's supposed to be the number one gigolo. And just so happened, his sister takes up to Africa. And in turn, he's traded with an African exchange student who is male. And now the guy, both of them, they live in the project. And both of them are competing to see who's the best. They're preparing for some kind of sex marathon that they're getting ready to have. I can't remember the whole entire story, but it's nothing to do with sizes and it's just these two.
Okay. Okay.
It's a good story.
I'm sure it is. I'm going to have to check it out. I usually don't like to read about dick, but I guess I can check out the story.
It is not really. I'm a man, and I'm with that.
You ain't got to subscribe to Red, man. Look, if you wrote a story and you went outside of your bounds, you are a hero to me.
Melanie, let me ask you, Melanie, since you're on the line, tell us what you think about the story, the way he explained it. Did you hear the details of the story, Melanie?
He was very choppy. I couldn't really get everything.
I'm sorry. I'm in a bad location, and I'm wanting to move for a while.
Are you at work where you can't move? Because, I mean, the interview is really...
It really is bad because I can't hear from my... I'm trying to hear y'all, man, but I'm coming to call y'all.
Okay. Weenie versus American Weenie.
Right,
okay. African Weenie versus American Weenie. All right, so... did you get good reviews from this book? Because I see there's 7 on there.
I really didn't keep up with it. He asked you to write something in the book, and it was a way for me to explore my writing style.
And I wish they would have started this with.
Your writing style? Have you decided kind of what? The type of writer you are, genre that you like the most, or the type of, the type of storyteller you are.
I've read several Stephen King books. I may go towards that or something. I can do some urban. Right now, I got several people trying to do a project with me, so hopefully sometime in the future, I'll have something out. I haven't decided yet, but one of these is several different people from several different genres. So, which one I do, I haven't chosen one yet.
Okay.
Good answer. I mean, I know that's kind of vague and everything, but...
You obviously not going to have all the answers. I just was curious to know, if you decided what you would enjoy writing about. I think that a lot of people getting their feet wet for some reason choose sex. I guess when you're an adult and you know and you've done it, you know, I guess it's one of the things you think you can write about. I don't think it's that easy, but I just noticed that a lot of, you know, burgeoning authors tend to like to explore writing by writing about sex. So I don't know if it's easy or if it's conceivably easy. I just wondered. You know, that's a question for everybody, really.
Well, I'm going to tell you the experience. I think it's harder because you have to be able to get people to feel what you're talking about. So I don't know why people would think that writing about sex is easier
than writing about anything else, yeah.
About anything else, because you gotta make people feel a certain way. And even in regular writing, if you really look at it, you know, if you're writing a murder scene, you want them to feel the scene as if they were actually watching this shit happen. You know, you don't want it to be where they, you know, you want them to be either feeling like they're doing the murder or being part of the murder, or that they're outside the window looking in at the murder. So I think the same thing is really harder with erotica because you got to be able to. You're getting, you're messing with emotions now. Well, same thing with the murder, but you're messing with a emotion of trying to get someone that you don't know to get aroused. So do you think that's easier to do than writing a regular story about selling some drugs or, I mean, I'm not taking from that. I'm just saying. What do you think? And anybody can answer. Melanie or whoever would like to answer that. It's fine.
Trying to
what's the question?
Wow.
Yeah, like maybe you just need to rephrase the question because I don't know what the question is.
Okay,
I guess that
makes sense. The question is. Go ahead. Do you feel like what? Okay, somebody dropped. Okay. The question that I had was, do you feel like it's easier to write erotica versus any other subject matter? I guess that's what we were trying to get here.
Ultimately, the only thing that matters is your inspiration. There are some people that can write heartfelt stories that you get the same emotion. You know, you get, when you're reading the book, you get choked up as if you were actually there. So I think if the author has a way of bringing that across, I don't care if it's a love story, I don't care if it's a death, I don't care if it's, you know, erotica, I don't care if you know, if, you know, somebody losing the only person they ever loved, you know, because of a drug deal, or, you know, something goes wrong. You know, it's an all in how you relay that story. You know, as soon as the reader gets an attachment, you know, you feel, you know, the good books always have an emotional attachment to the characters, and that's how
we
gauge a good book. If we can talk about the character like they are real, like why
Absolutely.
Did you have them do that? Why did they go in that
right.
room? They shouldn't be there. Then, you know, as a writer, you have established that connection. But if you don't have any connection to anybody in that story, then you'd be hard pressed getting people to buy the next one.
Okay. I'm going to let another friend of mine is going to come in right now, Ms. Kim. Kim, how you doing? Just start speaking, Kim. Your mic is on. Okay. She dropped. Okay, I guess she didn't want to talk. Anyway, you're right. It's all about the inspiration of the person and everything. But the experience that I have from writing, of course, is, you know, you really want to get people in tap, like you said, in tune to what you're doing. And the only way you can do that is to make your characters so believable that they feel that they're real people. When people talk about people, their characters outside of what they read or what they've seen, just like with let's just be honest with Miss Shonda Rhimes, you know, with people talk about Olivia Pope like she's a real woman. And they don't believe that she's not. They believe that Kerry Washington is really Olivia Pope, and whatever fuck she does, they believe it. That's how you have to have your characters. Okay, Kim, I got you back on again. Did you want to say something?
I just wanted to tell everyone hello, first of all.
How you doing?
And,
hey, good evening.
Okay.
Kim Davis is a AKA friend of mine, and she wanted to speak, and I'm going to let her speak because she felt like she wanted to jump in. So we're going to let her do it. Go ahead, Kim.
Okay, I'm not an AKA. I'm an angel.
Okay, well, that's close enough. Damn, excuse me. Go ahead, Kim.
Okay.
Did you have a question? Okay, go ahead.
Yes. Now, how are you basing out your characters with the sexuality? Are you basing it on color or background or what? Because different people have different needs and different wants.
Okay, so first of all, Kim, who is the question for? Is that for the guests or is it for just anybody on the panel or?
Anybody on the panel.
Okay. DV, you want to hit that real quick?
All right. I was typing in the chat room, so I didn't.
Okay, well, I can go ahead and hit it. I can go ahead and hit it. Okay, she asked, the question was, how do you base, I guess what I'm getting is, how you come up with your character's development? Is that what it is, Kim? Or is it, do you want to know how we come up with character development or as far as background and where we bring them from and all that? Is that what you're asking?
Correct. Economic status and all that.
Okay, all right, well, I can go by how I do it. When I write books and when I come up with characters, I have in my mind that, you know, when I create, I look and see what I imagine a character to look like, and then I just build my history from what I imagine a character to look like. So what I do is I'll say, okay, this character is a female. She has short hair. She's dark skin or whatever, and she's this or she's white or whatever the color she is. I'll have it with maybe she's got this background or whatever. You just kind of develop it as you go. And then as you create the character in the book, as you're writing, the character's life should start evolving in front of you in such a manner that you can take things and add and take from that if you want. You can give them an attitude. You can give them whatever you want them to be like, you know, as far as how you have them react to questions from the other character that you created. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In other words, they come to life in my mind, and I just put it on paper so that I have them discussing and doing certain things on what I think they are or how they should be. And hopefully I can bring that to the people who are listening or reading so that they can take that and say, oh, this person is this way. They have this personality. A lot of people who write will take and write down in their, when they come up with their outline and stuff like that for their books, they'll even write outlines for their characters and have the character, this character has this mind, they do this, they're stubborn, they're this. You know, they write this stuff out so they can kind of follow along on how they want that character to be. Me, I just let my characters tell me. They talk to me and tell me what they want to be, and I let them be it if I want to. If I don't want them to be that way, I'll tell them hell no and direct them the way I want them to go. DV?
Yeah. My process is only slightly different. I take real people. People who I don't know or people who I've met and I've seen who I say, hey, they'd be good in a story. I mentally take down their physical descriptions, or sometimes I just write down notes or text myself, you know, the idea of what this person looked like, and I create an identity for them. You know, they could be anybody who I want them to be. And sometimes, you know, my thing is I look at people's eyes. When I gauge people's eyes, it tells me the type of personality that they have or that they might have or, you know, in my mind that this is the personality that they're exuding to everyone else. You know what I'm saying? So that's the only difference that I have. Everything that I create, I use real people to create fictional histories and everything. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I go about it. You can create the person in your mind. Sometimes it's easier to create somebody who's already there and give them an entirely different personality. But as they're talking to your main character or as they're dialoguing, you bring parts of yourself and put them into that character so that these are things that you would say if you were in the situation, or these are things your best friend or your mom or, you know, the guy across the street would say if that were happening. You know what I'm saying? So you create this entirely fictional world based on your mind, but you may use real people, and that's what I do.
Right. Okay, now, there's a question that came out of the chat room. Someone asked, do you ever take real people and create them to your stories the way you want them to be instead of how they are? Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
Hell yeah. That's exactly.
Does physical attraction a big role in it, in your characters?
Well, yeah, I mean, because it depends on what you want the character to do in the book. Now, and I only say that when I write erotica. I mean, it just... Go ahead.
Okay. I can be the most ugliest person physically, but you're saying that the attractiveness does play a part in it.
Well, I mean, it's up to the author. Because you can have an ugly person doing a whole bunch of shit. Like, you can have, like, most of the time when I'd write books, sometimes, like, I got a book I'm doing now. This guy is a pimp, and he has all the charisma and everything that you can to get any kind of woman he wants, but he's ugly as fuck. But he's got such charisma. See, yeah, that's what you do when you create your characters. You have to give them what you want them to have that's different, that makes people intrigued about that character. So they don't have to be pretty all the time. Everybody doesn't have to look good in the characters you come up. And then you also got to realize the way you see the character, the people that's reading the book may not see them the same way. But you have to kind of present their attitude or their mindset in a way. You know, they might not even imagine what you're imagining the character to look like. They might have a different thought of what that person looks like. But the way the author has to do it is you have to give them the way that person acts and how they react to certain things is what you're selling, if that makes sense.
Right, because we could see the same people. We could both see red. And before, you know, he even utters a word, in our minds we have a picture. If we were to make him a character, this is who he'd be. So you would give him an entirely different personality based on your experiences than I would. Because everything is based on our experiences. Whether we had good experiences with people or bad experiences, we would give Red the personality that we wanted him to have, even if it's totally contrary to who he is. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And as a writer, that's what makes you a writer. That's, you know, that's called imagination. And it allows you to experiment with this person and put him in your story to be either, you know, an antagonist, protagonist, whatever you choose him to be.
That's just like in some of the... It's like somebody came to me, I guess they were trying to complain about the book. They were saying that this woman was like kryptonite. Everybody wanted her because the storyline was set up where everybody was trying to have sex with this one person, okay? I created it that way because I wanted it that way. Now, is that in true life sometimes? Yeah, some people are that attractive that people want them. But, you know, they tried to make it seem like it was unbelievable because maybe in their life it wasn't like that. But that doesn't mean that it's not like we also got to remember that what we're writing is called fiction. So the world we're creating is not real anyway. You're leaving the real world to read about something that's not real so you can enjoy, hopefully. Not necessarily leave the real world to go read about the real world. At least I don't want to do that. Some people do that. You know, like she was complaining about, and I always bring this up, she was complaining about the woman was having sex with everybody and nobody was putting rubbers on. Okay, well, in the fantasy world, you don't have to worry about all that shit. You just have sex and do what you want to do and enjoy. And if you want them to have an issue, you can bring that in or not. But she was actually trying to give a bad review because the person didn't take 5 minutes to put a rubber on. Well, that's not the way I wanted to write the story. You don't have to read the story if you don't want to. If you're looking for somebody to have safe sex, go read a how-to book.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what creativity is all about. When you create your stories, you're creating it in a manner that you want it to be perceived by others, and then they're to enjoy what you created, not create what they want. In other words, let them create it themselves. So we got another call. I'm going to see this 832 number and see who this is if they have a question. State your name, where you're calling from, if you like to speak.
Yes,
or if you just
can
listen.
You hear me?
I sure can.
This is Poetess Mimi T, and this is my first time listening to your show, so I was just sitting back absorbing everything.
Yeah, and usually we, and not saying that it ain't off the chain tonight, because it's in rare form, But normally we talk shit, and we probably gonna be talking shit here in another 10 minutes about sex or something. But anyway, this is a good subject where we're talking right now because we have an interested person that's interested, and I'm assuming that Kim probably, if she isn't writing, wants to write, and it's just coming up with trying to pick the brains of the authors that are here to, you know, find out ways that they can go about it, which is not a problem. We do that here on World Sex Radio as well. So I appreciate you calling in, and we can keep your mic on, or we can turn it off, whatever, if you like. It's up to you.
It's totally up to you, but I would say that when I'm creating, I do the same thing as you, mix reality with fantasy.
Right. I mean, you know.
Because how boring
is
it? That's
the purpose of reading.
Remember somebody who wrote a book that was entirely true, but then they changed the names and called it fiction? And we was like, that's not fiction.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That takes absolutely no imagination to write a true story and then say, hey, this is fiction. No, it's not fiction. You know, you just change the names. That doesn't make it fiction. That just makes it, you know, that just makes you not legally liable. You know, that's
right.
Pretty much.
It's called slander.
Right.
Right.
Anyway, there's a guy that's here, and he was on our show before, DV. We talked to him. We dogged him. And he was writing this book. You remember we had this guy a few years ago. He was on the show. He was writing. He had been writing these books. He's still writing them about his sexual encounters he's having with women. He's keeping a logbook. And when he goes around and he does book signings and interviews for book clubs, he actually shows dates and times of people he's been with. He's using real names in his books. I'm surprised he's still alive. But anyway, that's bullshit. I wouldn't do that. I mean, it just, you know. But anyway, that's what some people do. Is Kim still here?
Yes, I'm still here.
Do you have any more questions that you wanted to find? Are you in the process of writing or wanting to write?
I'm not sure because I have a lot of things on my plate, but I was very interested when I saw you send out the invitation to listen in on the group. I hadn't actually planned on speaking. But maybe one day.
We kept you from sleeping so you can listen. Oh damn! Okay.
Hospital. What? July 10th up until yesterday. So I'm in recovery
mode.
Right.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We just want you to, you know, if you got any questions anymore, and anybody else out there, the number is 917-889-8206. This is Word Sexy Radio, and it's Grown Folks Radio, as you can see. If you don't know, that's what it is. And I don't know, did our guest leave? Because I think he chimed off. Is he still here?
I think it was his phone then with the bad connection.
Yeah. Well, anyway, if you have any other questions, we definitely want to answer them. And since we got some of these, I think we have some poets in the area. We might even see what they're talking about, because I'm sure poetry writing is definitely different than writing a novel, because the audience that you're trying to grab and the things that you're trying to say is still storytelling, but it's in a different light. We might even go into that, but you know, that's just it. So DV, are you writing something, or are you not writing anymore, or what are you doing, man?
No, I'm still writing. Writing. I think I'm like the little train that thought he could. I'm still chugging up that hill.
Okay. Melanie got you. Melanie, you still here. We got your mic on. Are you making sure that he writes?
I was just about to say I got harassed the other day about DV, maybe like yesterday, 2 days ago, about when those sequels are coming out, Valentine especially. He's got quite a few folks waiting on the sequel to Valentine, or the second installment or whatever. So I'm trying slowly day by day to to chug some stuff out. And I myself, I'm trying to kind of keep it motivated too by putting out little electronic collections and slash fiction. So I've got actually just about enough to put out Steam Room. So I think I'm going to try to get that out by in September.
Okay.
Work is cold.
Okay. Well, you know, as you know, Morris After Dark is out there right now. I got Heater Addiction Within that I'm working on right now that will probably be coming out. I'm not going to let it come out until next year because I want to let this Morris After Dark kind of soak in a little bit. And, you know, people are reading. I want some more reviews. I want to get good or bad. I don't give a fuck. I just want some reviews. I wish y'all would just go ahead and read the book and let us know what we think because authors need that. You know, they don't have to always be good reviews, but I just want you, of course we want them to be good, but if they're not, then tell us. You know, we want to know what's going on so we can perfect ourselves, get it better, you know, get our creativity in a better light so that we can continue on. You know, it's what we want. You know, we want to know, you know, what we can do to make our craft better and not just have it. We understand, I know in a perfect world that you're not going to always have good reviews. But if you're going to give me a bad review, make sure it makes sense and make sure that it's something that, you know, that I can use. Don't give me some bullshit about, well, you didn't put rubbers on. You know, I want some shit that you're going to tell me that's going to help me to write the book better. You know? That's what we want. And the chat room is off the chain tonight. I thank you all in the chat room. Keep it going. Y'all is off the damn chain. But y'all can call in as well because we're going to do this second hour. We need to come up with a subject. I guess Cotton is out doing a poetry event tonight somewhere. Let her eat cake somewhere in Chicago. They're doing something up there, so she's not here. And like I said, last week we were talking. We had four authors on here. Two was invited. The other two just happened to just come in, and they all seemed to have been writing on the same they're from the same publishing company. So they all kind of came in and bombarded me a little bit, which was fine. I was left alone, and that was okay. I think it was some young lady's birthday last week. The reason why BB wasn't here, or was it something else? I wonder. Anyway.
Man, whatever. You know, don't even go that route.
Well,
I was working.
Okay, you
and that's the line I'm sticking to.
Okay, you was working. I can't enjoy the sex because the holding is poots. Okay. Norm?
Oh, yeah.
I ain't going to say her name. I ain't not going to say her name. Anyway, yeah. So, chat room, we got another hour of show, and I definitely want to, our guest is not here, and the second guest, Tony Wade, was supposed to be calling in, and I don't know, he's not here. You know, one thing about it, when people call to ask to be on the show, and then they don't show up, I don't know why. That's on them. So you know how that works. But what I'm going to do is I want y'all to come up with a subject that y'all want to talk about. There's been a lot of subject matter that's been talked about. You know, that I've been hearing these past few weeks, different things about different subject matter. Like, say, you know, D.L. Hughley has been coming up with a whole bunch of stuff about people, different things that they're going through, like just different stuff. I can't even remember some of the stuff now. But one thing I do want to talk about. Okay, we're gonna let you do it. But I have one question I want to ask before you do it, Melanie. What do you think, DV? I want you to answer this. What do you think about how Strahan's now deranged girlfriend, who used to be Eddie Murphy's wife, decided that she wanted to come out and say that the last wife that he had? That he got
I don't
the
know,
kids
man.
With.
Eddie Murphy done been through so many he-she's. He still got, from what I hear, he still got Johnny Gill living in his little
I'm
house.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he does. But anyway, the last wife he had, what he had the kids with, that Strahan
okay,
was messing
yeah.
with. Anyway, he got into the Hall of Fame, and I'm glad. Her name is Nicole Murphy. That's right. Thank you. She decided the day that he was getting inducted into the Hall of Fame that she wanted to put out that they are not together anymore, and fuck it, we're not together anymore, and we broke up and shit. And he wanted her to wait, but she decided to do it then, to steal the glory. What do you think about that?
Man, but, you know, it all comes back to attention. I could care less. You know, Michael Strahan, when he retired, you know, he broke up with his wife, who basically took half his fortune, and they said, you know, what's the best thing about retiring from the NFL? He said getting divorced. You know, so, I mean, that this is who he is. He's always been that type of personality that, you know, train wreck follows. He's managed to keep it quiet, but, I mean, look, he, quite frankly, I don't care. As long as, you know, he ain't put his hands on her, she ain't put his hands on him, you know, it is what it is. But
oh, now you talk about hands. Now we're going to have to talk about the other dude. But anyway.
Hey, but what I'm saying is this. To me, it's not that big of a damn deal if two people
really
who wasn't married, you know, broke up. So what? You know, she rich. So, I mean, I don't care.
Okay. Melody, what was you going to say? She's still there?
My topic was a little bit different. I was having a conversation with DV, I guess earlier in the week, I don't know, texting some. We were talking about this James Brown movie that was coming out, and he brought to my attention that none of the writers for the show or the directors are black. Nobody involved with James Brown's legacy and telling of his story, not one writer.
Well, you know something, since you brought that up, that's true. I mean, there's a couple other shows. Go ahead and finish your statement, then I'm going to
it was a very kind of eye-opening conversation because, you know, a lot of people get excited, or it'll be another music icon, we get to hear a story, and then you realize that they didn't even think enough of, you know, blacks in general as far as the contribution to music to have somebody close to him be involved in writing the script. But all of the actors, of course, you would never think, looking at all the black actors, of course, that's where it started. They even had writers from the UK writing James Brown's legacy. Anyway,
well,
so I thought it was a good
thing. You know, I agree with you to a point. First of all, it's case by case, because I'm going into some other cases where there's other biopics that are coming out. At least his made it to the big screen, because there was a Aaliyah biopic that was going to come out that they weren't going to go to any of the people as well. In the same case, him was going to be on TV. Same thing with the Whitney Houston deal. What I was going to say was, look how long James Brown laid in fucking house after he was dead. Before they, you know, because it was arguing over what they were going to do with his estate.
Yeah.
So I probably wouldn't have went to them either and asked them about him and
but
shit.
That's still
but I understand what you're saying. I get what you're saying. Should have been somebody who was around that knows about him that can elaborate on what was going on. I get what you're saying. I disagree with it, but I mean.
But wait, I see it like this, Red. You know what I'm saying? Suppose they wrote a story of, let's say, you know, Ronald Reagan. All right, and they say everybody from the director to all the writers, they're all going to be black. The only people who are going to be in this movie that's white are the actors. Do you know that white people
would
burn
the
movie down?
That movie wouldn't get funded.
But that's my point. The thing is, if they, but even if it got funded, and they say,
no
okay, you know, right, we're going to let all, you know, we're going to let all these black people, the ones that Ronald Reagan screwed over, essentially, we're going to let them write a story about Ronald Reagan. You know, everybody would be in uproar. All of a sudden,
man. Yeah. Well, I understand, but you know, believe it or not, I haven't seen the movie yet. I want to see it. There's a lot of people who said that the movie is actually really good. I understand that the people that was involved should have been black people or somebody who knew something about.
The thing is, what everybody stressed was that James Brown was a civil rights icon. You know, he was. You know, right. But the thing is, they never portrayed any of that in the movie. Everything was about music, singing, and dancing. That was it.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You know.
So it kind of.
Well, they wrote it, so they wanted to make sure the coon side was there.
But
the
that's like us writing a story about Red Snapper, and then you never picked up a gun. You know what I'm saying? You never really helped the country out. You know, you just, you know, it was Red Snapper the writer. You know what I'm saying? That's
right.
A big part of your life that's just not there.
Right.
And a big part of who you are.
And you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. So, I mean, I get, like I said, I didn't disagree with what both of you were saying as far as the story. So my question to you is what do we do as a people? Do we support it or do we not support it? Do we not go and see the movie because it had no one that was close to James Brown involved, or how do we approach that? What do we need to do to fix that?
But they're doing the same thing with Nina Simone. You know, even though they cast Zoe Saldana, when they ask the family, they're like, no, because nobody in the family.
First of all, she looks nothing like her.
Well, that's true too. But it wasn't even so much as that. They said that's the smallest thing. They said the thing is you have all of these white people getting rich off of black people's stories that black people aren't even allowed to tell.
Right.
You know, they're not filtering it down to the people that they're telling stories about. So, yeah, they got all these black biopics, but none of the families that they are, none of the basically the people getting the brunt of the money from the movie are all the white people who told the story, not the black people who lived through the story or dealt with the story. You see what I'm saying? They didn't even offer any money
exactly
to James Brown's estate. So, essentially, you know, it's another part of our history that's being robbed. And, you know, you got a lot of people saying, well, the story wouldn't have gotten made. Well, it's great, but it's still only half the story, and the only people profiting are the people who had nothing to do with it, who essentially looked on Wikipedia and said, okay, this is his story, this is what I'm going to tell. You didn't do any research. You
okay,
certainly
so,
didn't
so
go
what
after
about
the family.
What about the Tuskegee Airmen movie? There's been several, but the last one that George Lucas did, okay, what about that? That movie was about a part of history that we, a legacy that African Americans brought toward the cause of bringing us to where we are today. This man, and I'm not putting him on no pedestal or nothing like that, but nobody wanted to do the story correctly, and they said he didn't do it correctly. But he had to use his own money to do the movie. So do you think that it's... we can't get the funding as black people to do these movies, or we just don't want to do them because we think other things are important, or what is the issue? How can we fix this is what I'm asking.
There are black activists who have tried, and Spike Lee's one of those ones. You get blacklisted, you're too black in Hollywood, and you will know because then you'll just disappear off out of the limelight and you will stop getting funding. But essentially that's basically a purse string issue. I think independent film will probably become one of the best ways our stories can be told, even if it is not big budget and it's not widely broadcast. The internet is bigger than the movies. You know what I mean? And I think just saying no, I do think saying no to these films when you find out that 0% of the film, you know, outside actors included, you know, black contribution, well, that's the same with music. And people hand over fist spending money on crappy music, and it's like that's where it is where it stops. You have to stop spending your money and start seeking out independent filmmakers. That's all I see. Are there out there?
So you think we should not support the movie? That's your stance?
No, I don't think we should continue to give them a nod because they say, okay, well, let's see, 976 million movies about white people, white history. Okay, let's do one black one. Let's do James Brown. Everybody loves James Brown. Like he said, the activist part of James Brown, not going to be in the story. So, you know, everybody's going to feel good about him, but you're not going to understand the struggle of the time. And that's how they
right.
want it.
Okay.
They want it all through history. So that's why I said, no, I probably won't. I won't pay to see it. I don't know.
Well, you know, they did that with Cadillac Records. They did that with a whole bunch of movies that's out there. Even we can go back to the 70s with the black exploitation movies that they were making. They were getting paid on those movies. But who was in the damn theater?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? We was in the theater. Yeah. You know why? Because we felt, just like urban fiction is now, that this is the only thing we can associate ourselves with that we understand. It's, we see ourselves in it. That's the same
that's really
hope that they're,
feel
that
good
they're
about.
That's the hope that they're yep. hoping that they get. But you got Tyler Perry, he's making these movies. What is he making? Okay, somebody spoke on him about For Color Girls and all that. That's great. But most of the stuff that he's doing is what? The stuff that they want him to do, the coonery.
Right.
I know Half Plenty. I know, you know, all that. You know, they're fine as long as we do movies like Friday After Next and shit like that.
Yeah, they'll fund that all day and all day long. All
right.
day to be
yeah.
a hundred.
But the thing is, the one thing that...
get money to make a real movie about black abolitionists, about slave times, about the Caribbean, that ain't going to make it to the big screen. You know? And
well,
that's
you know,
what I mean when I'm saying. I'm not going to give
you
credit
what,
for...
You, You see what happened to the movie 12 Years a Slave.
Not like 12 days.
So,
I don't think that's the way it
went. You know what I mean? I mean, it was a real motherfucking, it was a true story where it was taken from a person's life. Okay?
Right.
It was a true story about a person who wasn't a slave who they put into it. But, you know, they only let it get so far. When it goes into, it may make it to the big screen, as we can see. It'll make it to the big screen, but then when it's time for the people to get awards and stuff, they'll only give you what they feel like you should get just to make you feel good, and that's it. That movie was nominated for a whole bunch of stuff, but it didn't get anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Django. They took Django. Everybody dogs Django. Said it was fucked up and all this shit. I thought it was a great movie. Even though it wasn't really a true person, it was about a person that kind of was doing those things. Still, you know, I just think people just don't, they don't know what they want. Now, we can make a movie called The Butler and do that shit, and people will be happy about that. You know, he was in the White House and he was doing all this shit. And, or like
a lot
you
of
put Girl Six.
Yeah, hey, look, I still like Girl Six. I don't care what none of y'all
I like
y'all
Girl Six, too. Where's Teresa Randall at today? Where's she at? Call
That's
in.
That's what I'm saying.
817-889-8206.
But no,
yeah, that's the last thing she's done.
But, like, let's be honest. The thing is, a lot of the movies that we see in portraying black people nowadays is subservient, you know, with The Butler, with The Help, with, you know, Django. You know what I'm saying? There's a conscious effort to put us in a position where, you know, that's where, you know, that's what we are, or that's what, you know, we've come from. You know, they never tell you essentially about the history that put us there. They just kind of put us there in that position to say, look how he overcame.
Well, see, the problem is this is what the problem. Me being a historian, by college trained, my whole issue is we need to stop thinking. And I'm not saying black people. I'm saying people. Period. Need to stop thinking that the slavery issue was just us. That is our history. Everybody, the white people and everybody need to agree to understand that that's part of their history as well. They keep wanting to run away from that shit and keep on saying it wasn't us and we sorry that this happened, blah, 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 but that was y'all. Hell, all of that is us. Once we can heal from taking responsibility, and all of us taking responsibility of what it was and it was a part of history and go forward, it's always going to be the same old crap that we got. It's always going to be that.
I agree. I
don't know how we going to fix this. You know, people are not going. They're not going to pay for it. Nobody wants to fund this shit. How do we?
Yeah. Well, I will tell you one movie that I do look forward to seeing, and it's Dear White People. And I don't know if you've seen the. And it's
trailer.
An independent film. It's an independent film, and it is basically tied up in nuance about the things we're talking about right now, the double standard that exists between, you know, just being black and being here and being in the struggle and kind of having white people as the magical overseer in every part of your life telling you yes, no, maybe, you know. And so that's one independent film that'll probably have a limited release, but I'm very much looking forward to seeing it.
What's
and
the
that's
name
the
of
stuff.
It?
It's called Dear White
right.
People.
Okay.
Oh,
hey,
Dear White People.
Like, listen to this, all right? I'm going to list y'all off 10 movies from the 90s, and y'all tell me if y'all heard them, all right? Do the Right Thing.
Of course.
Yes, no, maybe. Boys in the Hood.
Yeah.
Of course.
New Jack City.
Yeah.
Of course.
Minister Society.
Yeah.
Yep.
Higher Learning.
Yeah.
Yep.
Poetic Justice.
Yeah.
Yep.
White Man Can't Jump.
Yep.
Yep.
Malcolm X.
Of course.
Yep.
And Set It Off.
Yep.
All right. Now, name me 5 movies since 2000 that have not, like, I'm not talking Best Man, that just came out, that have featured black people in prominent roles where they weren't subservient. Any movies between 2000 and 2014?
The damn Think Like a Man shit.
Predominantly Black Cast?
That's one. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Think Like a Man, 1 and 2.
No, you can't. Because I name individual movies, I didn't name sequels. So essentially, you can't name
okay.
two of them.
Well,
like,
Think Like
two.
A Man is one. Okay, we'll just say that is one then. That's a good question. What else is out there?
But no, my point is they're all forgettable. They're basically a lot of them are throwaway movies. The movies from, like, even the 80s, the 70s, you know, stuff like Car Wash. These are movies that we can remember, and these are movies that we have cultural identity with. Stuff like, you know, don't get me wrong, Think Like a Man, it wasn't a bad movie, but 5 years from now, I'm not going to remember it. Let's just be honest.
It's watered down. I agree. It definitely wasn't like, you know, like, what's the name of the movie? Oh, Lord, it's two love movies. Love Jones is one, and there was a Love Basketball. Those movies, once
don't
again,
forget Off the Wood.
Yeah,
those
real,
are
black love,
black
real
classics, but that's what I'm saying. These all came out in the 90s. You know what I'm saying? But it wasn't so much as that they were directed entirely by black people, but they told a story that we really identify with. You know,
look where we were at in the 90s. Even our music was
right. It was rebellious.
Our music was in a phase that I think was the first 5 years of the 90s to me. Was the most awesome part of the 90s.
Oh, you ain't know a lot
about what was going on with Digital Planets and the type of rap we had with the jazz background and all that. I mean, all that stuff.
Not only that, but think about the R&B. You can't even like all of the groups that we had in the
Mary J. and all them. Yeah.
We're talking about the Silk. We're talking about the H-Town. We're talking about the Boys and Men. We're talking about the Jodeci.
Right.
They don't
all
have,
of that.
There's no black. There is no all black. You know, guy group anywhere around now, except the dudes that came from the 80s and 90s. They still touring.
Right.
But, you know what I'm saying? It's like they wiped us off the planet and replaced us with Justin Timberlake. Don't get me wrong.
Well,
you've
been replaced with music, drum machines, and, you know, and people sampling off other stuff. That's what you got now. And the lyrics don't say anything. They're not talking about anything at all.
But what I'm saying is, it's just like...
How many times you come now? That's what they want to talk about.
Man, I heard a song from, like, you know, I can't remember who sung it, but the first line of the song was, "I know I get your panties wet." Like, that's the first freaking line. Like, damn.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? like, shit. Like,
yeah.
Really?
Well,
so what I'm saying is
this
not
is what
so
we
much.
Have. The generation we have now is definitely different.
Right.
You know, I give it to Nick Condition and all them. They're still trying to hang on, but you know, those guys, people like you said, they're going quickly, spiraling into a has-been role.
But
you
the
know.
Thing is, whenever they tour, whenever we hear about them touring, we still run to their concerts because.
Oh yeah, they come
so
in here on
the 20s. Remember. Yeah, it still makes a big deal to us because these are the songs that we can recite from the beginning to the end. I try to like the music now, but, you know.
I don't try to like it. I ain't going to sit up here and lie to you and tell you that shit.
No, I always give music the benefit of the doubt. Always, always, always.
The only music I listen to now is like you said, like the Eric Robinson stuff, the, you know, the different kind of, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you know, because like me and Melody go back and forth. I'm a big Luther Vandross fan, and every time she'd be like, "Luther Vandross, you know he gay," I'm like, "I don't want to hear that shit." Luther Vandross, man, you know.
Yeah, he was singing to
big
men, but it's okay.
Hey, look, like, but when I tell her Michael Jackson,
Jackson's
boyfriend came out, she would jump down my throat.
Michael Jackson's not gay.
Michael Jackson's boyfriend came out and said that they were together.
If you get enough money, your boyfriend will come out and say y'all was together too.
Hey, you give me enough money, I have a boyfriend.
Oh,
somebody in the chat room is upset with you, DV, because they believe
that. Yeah, I know, but
Luther
Luther
was gay.
A couple of days.
I think part of the death he had. I mean, he had a stroke and everything, but I think a lot of it was complications from him. I'm serious. They kept it quiet, but a lot of it was complications from him having maybe AIDS. Of course, they'll never say that, but...
Nah, but you know what the crazy thing is?
Luther got real small at the end. Huh?
Never.
Hey, you want to hear something really crazy? I bet you haven't heard that the first boy that testified against Michael, they actually came out and recanted their story, say, look, you know, dad told me to say these things, but you didn't hear that in the mainstream media. Every time you hear about Michael Jackson, it's all of a sudden
he was out there, but it wasn't out there long enough. It was out there, but it wasn't out there long enough.
But
that's
what I'm saying.
What made Michael
look guilty
is what...
No, because
see,
whenever they was going to make a Michael Jackson Day, they shot that shit down in a heartbeat. Oh,
but,
he, you know,
let me tell you this real quick. He wasn't, but let me tell you this. What made him look guilty was when he paid those people off so fast. He should never have done that. And he felt like, well, they just want to get paid.
Basically, the lawyer said it's better to pay and make it go away than to pursue it. Even now, his debt. That's really, because I have anybody tell you that. A hospital tell you that.
They trying to sue, whether it's true or not. All they want is compensation for damages.
Well,
and in most cases, in Michael Jackson's case, is a lot of it
was that's even with this song that's out right now. That's even with the song that's out right now with Justin Timberlake, okay? They playing it every 5 seconds every time you hear it.
I know.
This is
I'm
a
so
song that Michael Jackson did not want to put out. It's out there, and then all of a sudden, as soon as that song came out, somebody came out talking about Michael Jackson. He fucked me. He did something to me. You know, I mean, he's dead, and they still saying shit. Every time a new song drops. You know, it's crazy. But, I never would believe. I don't care if it came out and they showed me that he was gay. I never would say he was. I love Michael Jackson. So it's like y'all say Luther ain't gay. Fuck it.
I'm with you on that, Michael. I'm with you. And that's another part. They won't talk about his activism and his giving either. He gave tons of money to charity.
He
traveled the world. He worked with. He did. He did a lot for
humanitarian aid.
Absolutely. All the foundations, that stuff was legit. You always turn around so much and give him millions of dollars to children's charities
and he gave back.
And
he gave back
to... make a movie about him, you won't hear it.
No, but they... And he actually gave back to the community, his home community, not just like Oprah giving back to South Africans. What the fuck? She was on the show this morning talking about her girls. What the fuck is her girls in South Africa? She got a school in South Africa. What about pulling a school in the United States for some girls that need some help?
Yeah.
You know, she goes all the way to another country.
Well, you know, when you get to that level,
look,
and that's
something
with celebrities, they don't want you to give back to blacks because that's empowering. And I really believe that. That's why you see all these celebrities out here courting money. It's like this unspoken rule that you just...
Well, you got all the white celebrities. They want to go and get their pet blacks and raise them and shit.
It's pretty screwed
and
up.
Hey, look, I got me a pet right here. It's a monkey and shit.
You
this
know, like,
monkey.
Hey, I rescued this dude. You know, if it wasn't for me, you'd have lived a life of squalor. And that's basically what they're telling you. I hate the fact that they, every time, like... I had a friend who was, you know, from Johannesburg. He was like, every time you hear about South Africa, you know, they show some backwoods tribe that nobody's ever heard of, and they give you this belief that that's what South Africa is. He was like, but Johannesburg is probably one of the most beautiful cities that you will ever see in your lifetime. You know? And he was like, I just hate that the fact that they try to make you think that, you know, that everybody in the country is so backwards. He was like, and every time you hear somebody American talking about Africa, he said they don't talk about the country. They talk about the continent as a whole, like, you know, like everybody doesn't have their distinct identity. He's like, that's frustrating.
You're not confounded in Mexico with the United States. Yeah.
That's because everybody thinks that Africa is a country, and it's not.
Right.
Well, that's what's been portrayed for decades.
Well, Africa is a continent, just like Asia is a continent. There's a bunch of cities, or a bunch of countries.
Just like Europe
that.
Is not. I don't see how Europe is a continent. Help me understand that.
How is
we're
it a continent?
Europe is attached to Asia. So how is it a continent? I'm still lost. I was like six continents.
Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly. You were told, just like everybody was. And then you grow up and you're like, well, wait a minute. No, it ain't.
That's
what's called your
that's
Asian
like,
folks all
that's
the
time. Like calling Canada. That's like calling Canada a continent. Well, Canada a continent. Ah, it's attached to North America.
That's why the biggest argument if you want to have with some white people is to talk about Egypt.
Oh, God,
they will,
really?
Don't get me on that one.
They will
don't
argue
get me on that
up and down that Egyptians have no black blood in them at all. They got Macedonia blood and all this, and Cleopatra was mixed with this and no black. And you know, they'll argue down on that one.
Oh,
I had some history.
You know,
professors tell me.
you know the movie that they got coming out. They got Pharaoh as white, Moses is white, but they got all his guards and bodyguards as dark, chocolatey black. Like, I forget the name of the movie. What is it? What is it, Mel?
I know. I saw that. They just finished it, didn't they? It was filmed over in the UK and somewhere. They made it into Egypt, and that dude, Christian Bale is in it, and a few others.
Right,
I know
Christian Bale is Moses. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, really. Yeah. I still fail to understand. No white person anywhere can tell me this. I was like, I still fail to understand how you can call Moses the son of Egypt. He was the Pharaoh's godchild, essentially. And everybody accepted the fact that, hey, this dude is one of us. If he is white as a snow, he white as snow. I just can't fall into that belief system.
Right. Well, you know, that's the only way they can make themselves feel good. Like, for years, a lot of people were fooled into believing. Since we're talking colors of pictures and betrayal, you got some people today that won't worship a picture of Jesus unless it's white, because they feel that's what they grew up on. That's what they think it is.
Oh, no.
You give them a black Jesus, they'll be like, what?
Yeah,
that's not Jesus.
Right. You know, that's blasphemy.
We're running people away now. But anyway, I'm sorry. People are leaving the show.
No,
but anyway.
What did that happen? Basically, there was a king in Europe, and there were actually no pictures of an actual Jesus. This was like 6th, 7th century A.D. Actually, no pictures existed of Jesus. So what he did was he had his son commissioned as, you know, the guy that they would paint Jesus to look like. So essentially the image that we are all looking at, you know, that is Jesus, is essentially some guy from the 6th century son. It is not what Jesus looked like. I don't care if you play to a white Jesus, black Jesus, the image of him is not that person.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how you had blonde hair and shit over there and blue eyes over in that area. You know, but like I said, it's all for them, because for them to feel superior, they had to make it look like what they look like.
Right.
So that's what it's all about. It's about that, you know.
Because, you know, black people haven't done anything.
What gets me is you got these older black people who believe in God and everything, and I applaud them for loving the Lord and all that. But they still see this picture, and they won't accept the fact that that's not their Jesus, because they're holding on to that. They're holding on to that blonde hair, blue-eyed dude picture that was depicted, like you said, from somebody's son that they painted, you know. Just like Mona Lisa is really, and I still believe this, is Leonardo da Vinci in drag. No, that she's Leonardo da Vinci in drag. He painted himself.
I was like, I ain't going to take it there, But
that's been discussed as well.
And, you know, Alicia got it right.
She was,
you know, she was like, you know, all these religious movies and not a black person fight. Noah, you know, like, you know, they lead us to believe that Noah is the sole white person on planet Earth after the flood. But yet, when the world was repopulated, we somehow all got melanin from Noah, you know.
Right.
You can't develop melanin from not having that melanin. So, I mean, that's
exactly.
Just a scientific fact.
Right.
But,
well, you know,
they
do all this. Yeah. They do,
you know,
all this
these
stuff.
Are the, but what I'm saying is these are conscious images being put in front of us. You know, like if you talk to some old head about white Jesus, they will cuss you out. If you're like, I ain't praying
that's
no white
Jesus. That's what I'm
Jesus. Telling you. You know what I'm saying? They'll tell you, you know, you the devil and you don't belong in their house, and they'll hit you with a broom or, you know, whatever's convenient. But I'm just, you know, sometimes when you sit back and look at how they are depicting us and even how we're depicting ourselves, you know, you just have to frown, because a lot of what they're doing or what they used to do, we do to ourselves now. You know, there are people like, you know, poor Mr. Eric Gardner. You know, there are people saying, well, hey, had he let himself been arrested, he would still be alive. But what they fail to realize, the man was never under arrest. He had never been accused of committing a crime. By law, nobody can arrest you if they haven't accused you of a crime. They can't arrest you just because. Probable cause means that you have to have knowledge of a crime that has been committed in order to arrest somebody. He did nothing wrong. The store owner said as much. But you still got black people out there telling you that you need to surrender your rights and you need to, you know, because you're black, you're guilty by, just because you're black, you're guilty to proven otherwise, that you need to just go ahead and throw away your rights and do it exactly what they tell you to do. And as long as you think like that, as long as you want to hold that belief, they will always treat you like second-class citizens, which is why they, you know, which is why they started changing the laws when the Black Panthers knew their laws. You
right.
know, they went around walking with guns in plain sight. And white people said, whoa, we can't have this. They know their laws. We got to change the laws.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought it up because that's exactly what the Black Panthers did. They tried to make it the Black Panthers depicted as they was militant and stuff, but they weren't. All they were doing was following the laws of the Constitution, and people was getting pissed off because they knew the law. That's what was
yep.
the problem. And I get tired of them thinking, just like they had Malcolm X, you know, at first, yeah, he was going against calling white devils and all this. But once he found out what was really going on with the nation, he started turning around. And that's why that part of that Anglo-Saxon nation killed him. But, yeah, they, part of that was probably he was involved. But, you know, that people just need to know the history of things. They don't know because they go by what they're told and they don't check it.
Right.
And, you know, that's our problem. They don't check to see if it's true or not. Like, they'll take something off the internet and believe that's real without checking.
I was telling my son this, and it's inherent in human nature. The first time somebody tells you something, you will believe that to the death until somebody provides proof. Otherwise, it doesn't matter if the first person who told you was wrong. If they said 2 plus 2 is 5, and you went to school and, you know, the teacher said, what's 2 plus 2 is 5? And you was 4, you would fight that as a child because, you know, my parents said that 2 plus 2 is 5, 2 plus 2 is not 4. And that is who we are.
Right.
That's inherently. You know, these are the things that we do. The first time
right.
we hear something, the first time we learn something, that is what sticks like glue. And
exactly.
But nobody ever wants to challenge that method of thinking until they're forced to challenge it. You know, like Eli Whitney. All my life, I've been told Eli Whitney. This is the guy who made the cotton gin, all right? All my
but
life I've been told Eli Whitney was black. No, he did make the cotton gin. But I've been told that he was black. I looked up
He's
an image,
black.
Like, last year of Eli Whitney. This dude white as a snowflake.
Yeah.
And all
my understanding, DV, was that he was the one who got the patent for the cotton gin. He didn't actually create it.
Well,
that a black man
still,
created. That's what I, that's where I got it. Now, I'm not, you know. You know, I only study
but,
history, you know.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I'm talking grade school when everybody's
exactly.
like, oh, Eli Whitney, black, he created the cotton gin.
Right.
You know, the story was he created the cotton gin to get slaves to work less, and, in fact, the cotton gin made slaves work more and harder.
It
you
did.
Know? So
it did.
Poor Eli Whitney, you know, he went against it. Come to find out, this dude practically owned slaves. He's a white dude. You know what I'm saying? And he didn't give a damn about the slaves. And, like, I'm finding this out 30 years after the fact because all my life I'm believing poor Eli Whitney, this black dude who created the cotton gin, is, you know, who basically made it work hard to work for slaves. You know, my whole life
right.
I went thinking that until I learned, you know. So, like I said, you know, you have to want to question, you know, these things. You have to want to find out what the law is. You have to know what these things are. So anytime somebody approaches you with a lie, you know better.
Well, that's just like what we talked about last time you was on the show. We talked about the creator of the Three Musketeers and the Count of Monte Cristo and all that. You know,
yeah,
the same
Alexander
person
Dumas.
Was a black man. He
right.
had a Haitian background. His father's side of family was Haitian. But, you
and
know, they don't want to give
Count
that credit because they
said based on his dad.
Exactly. So, you know, a lot of people don't know that the Three Musketeers was written by a black man and D'Artagnan and all these things that was going on with a black man that did that because it's just hard to believe. And we've created so many things and done so many things. The stoplight, all kinds of things that we have that we use
Garrett
today,
Morgan.
Created by us.
Yeah,
Garrett
but it
Morgan.
Wasn't so much as that.
You know,
when
thing.
You think
yeah.
about all of the great, you know, every time they bring up, you know, Renaissance literature, you know, of course they attack Shakespeare to everything. You know, everybody has a name. Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. You hear about these names automatically being attached to their works. You never hear Alexander Dumas' name attached to Three Musketeers, and that's almost been
nope.
done as much as the Christmas story. I mean, not Christmas story. What's the Christmas Carol? The Ebenezer
yeah.
Scrooge. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? It's been done.
Well, if he had some black in him, boy, I'd really be, boy, I'm going to tell you, that story to me is like one of the, not better than the Bible, but it's right there. That Christmas Carol creation has been done so many different ways, but that dude was way ahead of his time when he wrote that.
Right. But his
way
name is still attached to it. You will
yeah,
never,
it is. But
like,
do we
I had
know
to
if
learn.
He's black or white? We don't know what he is. Charles Dickens?
Right.
What is he?
No, Charles Dickens is white. It's
okay.
Because his sister, Emily Dickens,
right.
is white as a snowflake, you know. But what I'm saying is I had to find Alexander Dumas' name. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you,
so
if you see a picture
like,
of him, if you, have you seen a picture of him? He has a fro.
But you,
he's got
but
a half
you
fro.
Actually, yeah, but you actually have to know his name in order to find him. Because if you look
exactly.
up Three Musketeers, they're not going to tell you Alexander
his name is not
Dumas.
Attached to it. Absolutely.
Right.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
So you look
but
up
when you
Count
find his
Christmas.
Picture, find a picture of him, though. He's got an afro. Dude's
yeah.
got an afro.
You know, and these are the things that I'm talking about. Once they take these images away from you, they keep you from realizing how powerful and, you know, how great your ancestors were, you know, are,
and that's the,
truthfully.
And that's the new history, that's the new slavery that they put us in.
Right.
That
yeah,
people are not realizing today.
You have
right.
access to all this information, but if you're not, if nobody asks
no,
you,
can
you
speak
to challenge
you want
yourself
to.
Or to use it, you don't use it.
Right.
No, I just
that's
said that
it.
Is so true. It's so sad.
Well, I mean, we're part of the blame. We can't just put it on them because
right.
we're not checking. We're not checking this shit. We're just going by what they tell us, and we believe it. Oh, yeah, it's what it is, you know.
That's,
like, that's what we
Rick,
do.
You know,
yes.
what's the Black Anthem?
The what?
The what's the Black
the,
Anthem?
Not anthem?
Yeah, the Black Anthem.
The Black Anthem? Lift every voice
right.
and sing?
Thank you.
You know,
yes,
I know that because, hell, okay, the only reason why I know that is because I went to all black schools until I was in high school, and that was a song that we sung all the time, and where we grew up in Kansas City, that's what we had, Lift Every Voice and Sing. But the thing was, when we did get integrated, it was because they fought so long in Kansas. Of course, you know about Brown versus Board of Education, right?
Right.
Well, they put so many appeals in, it took 20 years before they decided, okay, fuck it, we're going to let these damn niggas go to our school. Okay? But when they did it, they set it up to where they had somewhere else to go. They took our school from us, our legacy, and made it into a magnet school or to a school where they can send their kids that had to have B's or higher to go to. So it's still, we lost everything anyway. They took all the trophies, everything that we, that the black schools won and everything. And destroyed that shit because they didn't want to have that legacy still there.
But this is
so.
What
I mean,
I'm
it's there.
That yeah, and I feel you. But like these are the things that you know I talk to people about because if you know your history, you know you're able to combat a lot of things that you see. You know, the problem is a lot of us like ask anybody 30 and under because look, I'm 36. You know. I don't know too many people younger than me who know the words to lift every voice. In fact, if you would ask them what the Black Anthem is, they say the you know the Pledge of Allegiance. You know what I'm saying? Like seriously, you know you don't know. So
it's probably people that don't even know the Pledge of Allegiance.
But
you don't
that,
that
was something that we had. That was something we had to
okay,
do.
Okay, wait.
That was something we had to do. All the time from kindergarten on up to now. I mean, to, you know, that was something that we had. It was instilled in us.
Yeah,
when
like
they still
Alicia
had prayer
says,
in schools.
Right. Alicia says, we have just as much access to info as everyone else. We have to do what other people won't do for us, and that is be interested in our history and learn about our history. In all fairness, they probably don't know the anthem, the other anthem either. But,
she's right, but,
you
let
know,
me ta- but let me say this, though, to that. If you don't have an interest or put the interest out there for them to go look at the history, they ain't going to do it. You got these kids that they don't even know why Martin Luther King has a holiday. They don't even know
right.
who he is.
What
because
is
we're not
they
we're not instilling it in them. No, they say he's some old dude. I think we talked about this, DB. We seen, like, they had this thing that was coming up with Martin Luther King, you know, how it's always on Monday.
Right.
They have these little parties going on. They got pictures of Martin Luther King and with chains around his neck and all this shit on
oh,
posters,
yeah. the club,
saying that he's like it's Martin Luther King, like he's you know with his pants hanging off and shit. You know, it just because
this look.
Fuck,
this is the
shit
thing,
got me pissed
and
off.
This is what I would have to say to Alicia. The problem is this. From the time that I was in kindergarten to the time I was in 12th grade, I never learned about African-American history. We learned about African-American people individually. But the thing we were constantly told was U.S. history and European history. So the thing is, essentially what they're teaching us is that because slavery is over, there's no real discrimination, just, you know, pockets here and there of KKK. They automatically want you to identify that racism only belongs to KKK and, you know, certain countries that still practice apartheid. Right. So there's essentially no reason to check out your history because in America we treat everybody equally. And this is the thing that they have you thinking. So my mother was like, look, in order to know a lot about the people that they won't tell you about, she made me go to the library every weekend. Walk up to the library, I had to pick a different person every week, and I had to learn the history of that black person. She would give me a name. I had to go search out this person and know their history. All right? That is how I learned. But because my mother wasn't satisfied with what the schools teach. Everything moves a lot faster nowadays. Access to information is a lot faster, but parents aren't consciously thinking that their kids aren't learning their history. Why? Because black history is an elective. No, there's almost no school in the United States where you learn about black history until you get to college, and that's if you go to college. So essentially,
right.
You know, if no one tells you that these things exist, you're not going to look for it. You don't know what you don't know. So if no one tells you that, hey, you know, what I learned about Marcus Garvey was this. He wanted all black people to go back to Africa. When I actually read up on Marcus Garvey, that is not what he wanted. That was the last resort. You know what I'm saying? The absolute last resort. So, but like I said, it was the first thing that I was taught. So in my head, I had this belief, oh, this guy just wanted somebody who wanted all black people to go back to Africa. I know about him. Come to find out, I knew nothing about him. You know, so it goes back to you being the first thing that you're taught. Once somebody puts that thing in your head, it is hard, hard, hard to get out. And you actually have to pursue it to realize how untrue it really is.
This is what I wish, and I'm not, people don't take this wrong what I'm about to say about urban fiction writing, okay? Some of the stuff is good, some of it is garbage, okay? It's like anything, erotica, whatever. But my thing is, I wish some of these people would go back and take a look at Donald Goins and Iceberg Slim, what they wrote.
Right, which is why I'm so hard on literature.
And see what really urban fiction is so that they can fucking write the shit correctly. If they would read Donald Goins, all the books that he has out there, Dope Fiend and all this stuff, I mean, they just don't get it. It will give them a great insight on how this should be done.
But read even James Baldwin. Take, you know,
yeah, James Baldwin is good. I saw you had him on your page.
Right.
Yeah, James Baldwin,
you know, he's one of my
is favorite. Mm-hmm. Isn't he like 90 years old now? Did he just turn 90?
Like, man, I couldn't tell you.
I think so. I think his birthday was the other day. How are you supposed to know that,
but,
man? Come on. Anyway.
Yeah, but no, like, it is his works that I'm in love with. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But not only that, you know, I didn't realize how involved in the civil rights struggle that he really was. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
I didn't know how involved in gay rights struggle he really was.
Was he
so,
gay?
I mean,
think he was gay, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was gay.
Because if I recall, no, I am pretty sure, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure he died, I want to say 90s.
I think he would have been 90 years old this week.
When I first got my hands on something he wrote, it was like maybe 10, 12 years ago, you know, and like I said, a lot of the things that, you know, that he had written about, I was like, you know, I could identify with because, you know, my mother was like, look. Oh, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say was, did you know that Langston Hughes was gay as well?
Nope. But the sexuality is irrelevant. And like,
no,
because
the reason why I'm bringing it up is not to belittle them. I'm bringing it up because it was a time. It's a time that people need to understand. If you're going to know about these great people that we have in our lives that gave us what we got, you need to know that piece too. That it was okay. He didn't care. He wrote about stuff like that.
Yeah, well, that's
all
I'm
saying.
Yeah, and you're right. It was just like a lot of the injustices that were done. You know, especially in Langston Hughes times, had to be kind of, you know, either they were overt or they were under the table. You know, so whenever you're like, I had my son.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I had my son look up Ida B. Wells. you know.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, you know,
he didn't,
I'm glad
right,
you brought
he didn't
her
know, up. Right, he didn't know who she was. You know, he was like, who's
well,
Ida
B. Wells is a distant cousin of mine.
Is she?
Yeah, she was married to one of my cousins, Barnett. Mm-hmm.
Man. But, like,
yeah.
I made him, you know, look her up to find out the history and the things, the
she's
things
like a,
that she
she's
dug
like
up in the name of journalism.
One cousin of mine, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Ida B. Wells was big time. Yeah, she's
right.
in she's
but,
in my family. She's part of my family. Anyway, go ahead.
But, you know, the newspapers and the articles that she put out about, you know, about slavery, about reparations, about hangings, about lynchings, you know what I'm saying? And she
all
put these in print so that people understood what was really going on. So in the time
right.
of no social media, she's constantly putting out, you know, papers to let black people know that this is what they're doing to us. Either you act or you die, you know, and it's kind of, you know, kind of like that now. You know, we got people, you know, people who look like us dying all over the United States. And the first thing as black people we've been conditioned to do is, well, if he had been following the rules, this wouldn't have happened. But he was following the rules. Well, if he had if he just handcuffed himself, or if he hadn't taken that bullet, we constantly make excuses for the people who are the victims. I mean,
well,
you know,
guy, it's like okay, just like the case that
we constantly
happened.
Make excuses against the people who are victims.
Just like the recent case of the guy was they killed him. They ruled it as a murder
right.
when they were trying to put
only
him down.
Recently,
the big guy.
Whenever,
yeah, only recently they ruled it as a murder. When it first happened, they didn't. But
no, they said
it's
it was his asthma or his heart, or
right,
they blamed
right,
it on everything
right.
else with no actual proof.
Right. But now they're saying it's murder. So what are they going to do with to the cops who killed him then? Nothing.
Well, they had him on death of duty, but who knows now?
They ain't going to do nothing to him.
No.
Nothing.
But the thing is, the reason why we're so pessimistic is because this. We've seen this before. We've seen... You know, when, you know, like we were talking about Fruitvale Station. The cop that shot him, you know, I can't remember his name right now because I'm so just fired up. But when he got shot, this man was face down with his hands behind his head. Gun goes off, kills him. Guy walks
right.
off. You know what I'm saying? How much more submissive can you be? You know, and he walks
yeah.
away. So because we've seen this story over and over and over again, you know, we've seen Trayvon Martin's killer walk away scot-free. We've seen these things. We've seen a guy get shot up 90-something times on the day before his wedding when he was pulling out his cell phone. You know,
right.
so we've seen black people, you know, run up to, you know, getting bad car accidents, run up to people's house and get blown away. So what I'm saying, and you know, the trial is only happening now. So what I'm saying is because we've seen this story over and over and over again, we're afraid of the outcome. And because we're afraid of the outcome, we've conditioned to think of it already as they're going to walk off. And that way we won't be as angry. We've conditioned ourselves to not be as angry because we know they're going to get off rather than be angry because they got off. Be angry
yeah.
because of the injustice. But we've already
right.
conditioned ourselves, like, since they're going to get off, I might as well not get mad anyway. That's just the way it is. It will keep being that way as long as we keep thinking like that.
That is true. Very true. And it's amazing that we are conditioned. And a lot of this is still from the Willie Lynch background. You know, for those who knows about the Lynch story, you know, Willie Lynch is the, you know, the story on what he put out about how to treat us. And as long as you keep us and I'm just paraphrasing it, keeping us to thinking that, you know, we have to have this black-white or light-skinned, dark-skinned fight between each other. And as long as we're doing that and killing off each other, they don't have to worry about us.
Right. Because as long as we think we are the problem and not that
yeah.
this – that the situation that we're in is the problem, we'll constantly do the same things over and over again.
Yeah.
And every time
so,
you turn
so
around,
anybody that's
you
out there listening, you should get that Willie Lynch, get the Lynch letter and read it if you haven't. It explains why we treat each other the way we do.
But not only that, Mel was telling me about this video that something about colors. Something, it'll come to me. Like I probably got to
text Well, the
Mel,
movie that's coming out?
No.
About dear white people?
You're talking about Hidden Colors.
Hidden Colors, thank you.
Hidden Colors.
It's about melanin. It's a story of melanin. That's the beginning story.
Oh, okay.
So, like, you know, she keeps telling me, you need to see this, you need to see this. I'm like, all right, I'm going to buy it. You know, and I am. You know, I'm going to see it. Just so I can say I saw it and she can stop harassing me. But
Melody would have been a Black Panther if she was back then.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I could already see her, you know, with her little afro.
And that doesn't mean afro militant. She just would have been, I could see her with her fro and her black clothes.
Man,
on.
I could see her with an AK-47, just like clack, 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 clack. You know what I'm saying? You know, what I'm saying? You know,
yeah.
But what I'm saying is they constantly have you believing this myth that we are the enemy. And some people believe it so much that the first person they blame is us. Well, what did he do? First thing out their mouth. Well, if he wasn't doing this, then this wouldn't have happened. First thing out their mouth. So, I mean, the thing is, don't get me wrong. Sometimes that's the case. You know, sometimes some dude was shooting up, you know, shooting up Washington, D.C., and they had to take him down. It is what it is. You know, that dude crazy. But in cases where, you know, I will always stand on the side of the person who's died unless, you know, unless they had a weapon with them, in which case I can't stand with you anymore. But if you are unarmed and you died, then I'm sorry, I'm going to be a little biased towards you. I don't. Now, it's not always black, you know, but it doesn't happen to white people that often. It doesn't happen. Like, and during college, you know, during Sandy Hook, you know, I felt for them kids. I felt for them parents because those kids cannot defend themselves. And I don't care how you look at it, you can't justify it. But every time you turn around, if you know, and white people like to do this, you know, anytime somebody goes crazy and shoots up a school, they want to blame it on mental issues. It wasn't because, you know, he's white. It's because he was crazy. And that's the first thing that they do. If a black person walks into a school and blows everybody away, well, you know he was black. You know, that's the way they think. That's the way they act. You know what I'm saying? So,
yep.
It just kind of, you know, I just kind of shake my head. It's like, oh, okay, you know, that makes perfect sense then, huh?
And like you said, as long as it's black on black, as long as it's against each other, they're not going to give a fuck. As soon as you start fucking with their territory, their area, it's like crack wasn't shit until it came into the suburbs. When it started getting out there, that's when things really got silly.
You want to
hear
some shit?
We got about 2 minutes. Go ahead.
All right. A friend sent this to me. A guy named Rand Paul, congressman. All right?
Oh,
puts forth
shit.
A bill. Yeah, but wait, get this. Puts forth
I
a bill.
I know who he is.
Right. And, you know, I thought so too. But this guy actually put forth a bill in Congress to equate the same amount of time that you get for cocaine that you get for crack. Lower the sentences for possession because it's just not, you know, it's not worth it. He actively tried to push it through. He got even some Republican dudes to sign on with it. Democrats said, nope, we ain't doing this shit. We ain't signing it. Excuse me? People realize that there's a, you know, whenever black people go to jail, they automatically get time simply because, you know, more time because they're black. We know this. Because there are drugs that white people get caught with, they get slapped on the hand. If some starlet gets caught with weed in her car, a bag of weed, she serves 30 days in the French Riviera, and she's gone. A dude get caught with a bag of weed, that's 8 years. That's just real.
Right.
So the thing is, he tried to put forth an actual bill saying, look, if we're going to apply these drug standards, let's apply them evenly. You have to have the same amount of any drug, no matter what, to get a certain time. They completely dismissed him.
Well, they definitely got to change the weed. Because I'm telling you, man, in the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to be legal all over the United States.
When they repeal prohibition, all the people that they threw in jail, they essentially let out. They said, look, okay,
yeah.
It's now, you know, constitutionally legal to have alcohol, even though when you did it, it was not legal. We're going to let you out. The people who had weed and all those states that they passed weed, you think they letting anybody out of jail? No.
Nope.
Help me understand this. You now said it was legal. You're talking about that there are more people in your prisons than you can hold, but you will hold all these people with weed in jail.
So what did they do with the people in Colorado when they legalized it there, that they went to jail for it? Did they let them out?
They're still in jail.
That's what I'm saying.
All those black and brown and yellow people, they're in jail. All of those white people selling, you know, weed in Colorado, they filthy, sticking rich.
Cheap labor.
Right. Well, if they legal that shit here in Kansas City, I'm opening a store like a motherfucker. I'm going to tell you that right now.
But you know what they do? In Colorado, they charge these dudes $50,000 for a license.
Did you know $6,000 to buy into weed, legal weed?
And you need a 50, like the license is
$50,000.
You essentially have to walk, that's just to buy the in order to buy a weed license. Yeah, to actual a business license with a weed license is like $60,000. All right.
Oh, six.
To open your store and to say, hey, I sell weed, license by itself is like $60,000. How many
black
people do you know getting $60,000 loans?
They doing that because they want to make sure that who's selling it is regulated.
Yeah,
but you know, if you were selling the shit illegal, you got $60,000 somewhere you can bring out and get this goddamn shit.
Yeah, but the first thing, where you get this money from? And
yeah,
like, you're going to jail, sir.
Be open to auditing, basically.
They can't.
Yeah.
They can find a way to do it, I'm sure. I'm sure they can find a way to
do it.
I'm not going
to
sit up here and say they can't.
Have to be open for any kind of probe at any time. And they pay heavy, heavy, heavy taxes on their weed stock and their sales. It's really just like legal type mafia. I mean, it's just it's crazy to me how the price is so high for weed.
I'm surprised
but
that it took this long for the weed to get where it is now. These motherfuckers was making so much money under the table.
No,
that
you
shit.
Know the history.
Now,
you remember the reason why they made it illegal is because they said it made black people hypersexual and black people would attack your white women. So they essentially made it illegal to have marijuana because there was a guy, I can't remember his name, he's making newspaper out of hemp, all right? He was making hand over fist a lot of money because hemp was cheaper than paper. So he had low overhead, knocking these white dudes out the water. So they also found out that, hey, hemp, you can make oil, you can smoke it, you can do all these things to it. A bunch of rich guys got together and said, this is wrong. Let's put together this thing. They basically put together this propaganda trailer that said weed makes anybody who's a minority, because not white people, they don't do that sort of thing, they do coke. It makes it essentially, it makes all black people and it make anybody worth color hypersexual. So if you don't want these black dudes fiending for your white women, you will make this illegal. They call it reefer madness. It was the whole propaganda, the whole deal. That is the sole reason why weed is illegal, not because of any other reason other than that.
Well, I hear you. Well, you know, next week we're going to have, we got the two white girls coming on. I can't see who it is right now. They're going to be talking erotic shit. They said they got their erotica, really, really hot erotica they want to talk about next week.
We should have had this conversation.
We're going to have Lisa Reed or somebody. I can't think of the fucking names. Anyway, Tony Wade, if you out there, you were supposed to be on the show tonight. You didn't bring your ass
man,
on.
Man, I'm
going to
call Tony. You talking about Kai and Tony? Tony Wade.
Yeah, that one. Rodriguez's wife.
Call his ass right now. Just so I can
yeah, he was supposed to be on the show tonight. Didn't show up. And then other dude was here, and I apologize that he was kind of boring, but he got his whatever he had to say out, and then he jumped off the phone. But anyway, we thank you all for coming. Next week will not be this boring. We're gonna talk shit to these white girls and see if they can hang. And you know, because white fucking is weird.
No
I like laughing at some of this white fucking. That shit be tripping me up. What'd you say?
Said no race talk next week.
They said they was going. They said they was going. Shit, we're gonna talk what we do on our show.
Hey, I'm gonna talk shit now.
They said that they gonna bring it. They gonna bring it next week. They've been telling me this shit. That's what they've been saying. They gonna bring it. I'm like, okay, we gonna see. Y'all gonna bring it. That's all right. We thank y'all for coming on and definitely, you know, be here next week because we're going to be talking shit. Yeah. Thanks,
right,
Melanie,
guys,
for coming in and talking too, girl. Because you always bring them subject matters. We like that.